G'day, everybody, and welcome to Mastering Risk Management, the podcast that is for chief risk officers or heads of risk, or actually even just people that are interested in risk management. So hopefully you're finding the podcast series interesting and not just listening to me, but listening to my fascinating guests and their stories. And today is no different. We have a fascinating guest with a fascinating story. So we welcome Yuri Krugman today. So Yuri is an award-winning interim CHRO. So that's a Chief Human Resources Officer, for those of you that don't know the acronyms. Chief People Officer, CEO of HR, Talent and Systems Consulting. He's a top-rated executive coach, board member, startup advisor, and official member of the Forbes Coaches Council, as well as a contributor to Forbes and Entrepreneur. Yuri consults and coaches Fortune 500 and Inc. 5000 C-suites on HR operations and business strategy. He is the author of What Millennials Really Want from Work and Life and Be Your Own Commander-in-Chief from Idea Press in 2021. Yuri has spoken at EY, Google, UPenn, Columbia and NYU, among others. He has appeared on NBC's Tipping Point and numerous top podcasts. So, Yuri, that's a hell of a resume. Welcome along.
Thank you so much for having me, Anthony. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, no, that's great. Now, you've got a very interesting background there, and we'll dig into that further as we talk. But maybe for the listeners first, just talk about your career journey. I gather you weren't sitting in secondary school thinking, I want to be a chief human resources officer. So talk to us about the career and how you got to where you are.
Well, the way I got to be where I am is by taking all sorts of crazy risks and usually ending up in deep piles of it.
Yep.
But that said, I think that at least I've tried to pick up a lot of learnings and sort of context from each different place where I've been. I'm in my sixth career currently. I do HR consulting, obviously, and executive coaching. I help fast growth companies to continue growth in a sustainable way.
Yes,
by definition means not just taking risks, but managing them effectively.
Absolutely.
So that's a very short kind of, you know, we'll dig into the details.
Okay. No, that's great.
The balance of those crazy risks and then figuring out how to get back out of the trough.
Yeah, no problems. Now, you're risk-taking, and you and I have obviously chatted beforehand, but you've had an interesting life personally as well, and you maybe talk to us about your background and some of the moves you've made, because you've sort of travelled a little, shall we say.
Sure. I was born in Soviet Russia. Left when I was 9. We went to Kentucky, of all places. The place for Soviet Jews to go, but I grew up there in high school, and from there I went to Philadelphia. I went to UPenn for undergrad. The intent was, I'm going to be just like, you know, my mom, my grandparents, a PhD and MD.
Yep.
And of course, once I got into the pre-med curriculum, I realized, you know, this is not my thing.
Right.
Much kind of humanities focused. So I did in the end anthropology, and I did the biological basis of behavior, which was really neuroscience.
Right.
But from there, then I went to grad school in New York for 1 year. I was basically in their neuroscience PhD program. And during that year, I realized, you know, this is just a terrible fit. I'm really doing this because my mom wants me as a colleague. It's not really, you know, I enjoy learning things, and I love learning how the brain works. That, strangely enough, does not correlate to loving the lab.
Right.
Right? To sit and put layers together and understand how the mind works, you know, language, psychology, all these different things. But very different story when you're saying, you know, these molecules attack the end of the neuron and they cause something to fire. Okay, I mean, interesting, but not really that much. I left there. I worked as a paralegal. I worked in sales for the year between there and law school, because it was kind of immigrant ethos. Well, you know, we didn't come for me to twiddle my thumbs here. I need a graduate degree. So, there is some guy, you know, from a similar background who went to Columbia Law School and yada, yada, something, something. Not terribly smart in terms of sort of thinking about career. What should I be? What should I do? Well, okay, that sounds nice. Mom would be happy.
Yep.
Yeah. It didn't work out that well. So I went to law school. I did graduate, and throughout law school, I worked in a bunch of different, very kind of strange internships and jobs. I worked in an insurance defense litigation firm where they tried to fire me on the last day, if you can believe that. They didn't want to pay me for the last week. I worked for a personal injury firm. So, with all the bad kind of context. So it was me and, this guy, Scott Sherman, and I was his associates. But I had a really nice corner office for the summer, and he let me travel to Israel for 2 weeks. So thank you for that. Then I worked at New Yorker magazine for a week as a fact checker, which was pretty fascinating, as you can imagine. I'm someone who's been a writer since for a long time, and I've written two novels. So for me, it was like, wow, New Yorker. And, I'm working on this story about the killers of Anna Politkovskaya, who was this, I don't know if the listeners know, but basically she reported in great detail on the war in Chechnya back in the late 90s. And basically what Putin was doing there with the local henchmen and all that.
Yeah.
She was good. So anyways, was there for a week. I was like, wow, awesome. And I'm in law school this whole time. So what am I doing the rest of the time? I'm writing my first novel.
Right.
It's called Returns and Exchanges. Yeah, so that took me about 7 years to finish. And when I met my now wife, she said, basically, finish this or I'm out of here. And it got done real quick. So other than that, I graduated into the Great Recession in 2009. There wasn't much for jobs. And anyway, I didn't really want to be a lawyer. And I've tasted what it's like to do document review. And, there's a reason why lawyers are the second most alcoholic professionals after dentists. Just not a great profession if you hate long hours, if you hate very kind of, hitting the same nail over and over through document review.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to make a living. Obviously, I have, at this point, $250,000 in debt, which is not, not exactly chump change.
Mm.
I'm living in New York. I don't have money to pay rent, so I had to move back to my mom's house in Texas for 2 months. That's about all I could handle. God bless my mom, but when you move back home at that age, it's not pretty anymore.
Yeah.
So, two friends of mine, they're like, "Look, just come back. You'll sleep half on one's couch, half on the other." So I was kind of effectively homeless for about 5 months.
Right.
And during that time, I started dating my wife. She also was, she finished grad school and she got kicked out of her dorm. She lost her visa, so it was like it was a perfect setup. We're on a date, a friend of mine sends an email, "Hey, I'm moving out of my Columbia University housing." And if you live in New York, you know that Columbia housing is like the absolute best thing you can get.
Right.
It's fantastic housing and it's subsidized.
Yeah.
So I'm like, "Look, I know this is crazy, but let's move in together. You're homeless, I'm homeless. We both need a place to live in. It's 2-bedroom. So I moved in, and the same week I went to get a ring. I'm not about to, live with a girlfriend for years and years, and that's just not my style. So
yep.
We got married pretty quickly in the civil ceremony, and then we had the religious wedding about 11 months later.
Right.
That's kind of how adulting started. So totally on the back foot with this massive debt, kind of not really clear on what am I doing. I had a job at the time when I came back. In a hedge fund doing a project in credit risk. Okay, great. Sounds great on paper. I'm working at this big hedge fund. I'm not connected to the work. The project ends and I'm kind of back in this, lull. I'm not bringing in revenue. Just got married. So it's a big disaster. I mean, let's put it mildly.
Right.
So my wife, what did I marry? What did I get into here? So I have all these ups and downs. I get into a project at a bank. Everything is great. We have our first kid. And then again, I'm off a project for about 6-7 months. So I spent a lot of time with our oldest daughter when she was a baby.
Yep.
Lots of mommy and me with daddy, that kind of stuff.
Yep.
And, I kind of eventually, the finance thing was not for me. I worked at a couple other banks and all that. And, at one point, I actually started a company in healthcare, in health tech, with a friend of mine who's like, "You remembered my ideas?" It's like, "Yeah, you had some very interesting things. Let's build a company. Let's do health insurance for millennials." great. Like, what? How can I help you? He's like, well, why don't you become the CEO? Okay. So we did this company, More Spinach Inc. We kind of realized that we're up against a certain barrier. If you do insurance, you have to have $5 to $10 million in the bank just to get a license. So, like, chicken and egg.
Yep.
We got into the industry and you know, startups and health tech and all this great stuff. I got into one role that was, you know, something I'd never done, and it's an associate director level. So that's finance and operations.
Right.
And again, you know, it's more or less like this. At the time, I'm working at a consulting company. After 7 months, I finally got this job. The recruiter took a chance on me because he was an entrepreneur himself from Afghanistan. So an Afghani guy, an Afghani immigrant hires a Russian immigrant.
Sounds like the start of a joke.
Yeah, it really is, right? A lot of these things are, the start of a joke. So I'm in the consulting firm. I'm on the project for a month, and then a guy calls me from a health tech startup. I've been talking to him off and on, great company. We kind of see the world in the same way. He's like, come for lunch. Okay, come for lunch. He's like, look. I really don't like my director of finance. Should have been a, you know, red flag. Okay. All right. Happens. I need you to come replace him. Okay. But you know that I'm not a finance and operations guy. What's going on here?
Yeah.
No, no, no. It's okay. I know, like, I know that you're going to pick things up quickly. I just need your help. Come work with me. Like, okay, make an offer. So he makes an offer. I'm like, okay, make it permanent because I'm not leaving a consulting firm. You know, I just, whatever, got this job.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, here, full time. I'm going to raise you on where you are. Come tomorrow morning to our Boston offsite, and you're going to start. You're going to start with us on Monday. I was like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
So it's a startup. It's VC backed. It's a, you know, I drank the Kool-Aid wholesale.
Yep.
I get in the job, and I'm like this, you know, overwhelmed. I'm having to do financial modeling. I'm having to do, you know, contract negotiations. I mean, to do all kinds of things I've never done, some kind of sales calculators for, you know, to incentivize the salespeople. What am I doing here?
So
I've never learned so much in my life, but I burned out for 8 months. It was just too much.
Yeah.
So I moved over to another company, a competitor, to do product management. Again, I've done this much of that.
Yeah.
Here I am working with these, you know, Harvard MBAs, Stanford MBAs, all these years of experience. I was like, all right, enough of that. It didn't work out. Let me go to another startup. A guy I know from college, building this awesome company, urgent care for kids, to the home or hotel room. So, you know, I'm nominally special projects, HR, whatever is necessary. You know, worked with him for a few months. We had our second kid. And then, you know, we really don't see eye to eye. And it's a husband and wife team. Forget it. Bad news.
Yeah.
So I said, you know, enough. Enough. Like I can't like enough of the Kool-Aid. I'm not going to go work with someone just to work with them.
Yeah.
That's when I started my first company, Master the Talk Consulting. That's executive coaching. At the same exact time when I left that startup, our middle daughter was born. And unfortunately at 2 months of age, she was diagnosed with cancer, which was
my goodness.
Really crazy. So here I am. I'm kind of like, I finally start my own company and I'm trying to get my bearings and then.
Wow.
Yeah, it really forced me to get clear on who I am and what I'm doing in this life pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know, thank God she's doing much better. You know, went through some crazy chemo and all of that stuff, but she's recovered completely.
Oh, thank God. Yeah.
Yeah. So since then, you know, after doing enough coaching and seeing a lot of top talent leave companies that are even best companies to work for and, you know, your Googles, Facebooks, et cetera, sitting there thinking, you know what? Okay, I see patterns here, right? Because I'm kind of a systems thinker. Lack of alignment. People have golden handcuffs. That kind of situation, and they're screaming out. I kind of want to remember who I really am. Like I may have shelved. I used to doodle, you know, in a notebook when I was a kid, and like I haven't done that in ages. I, you know, that's how I think. And here I am, squeezed into some kind of cello case, working for some bank. Yeah, they're paying nicely, but I feel like utter garbage. Like, who the hell am I? What have I become?
Yeah.
You know, in that situation, you have to help people kind of see the bigger picture, help them to understand their story. There's a lot of breadcrumbs that I've learned to understand because I'm an immigrant. I've switched careers, you know, 5 times before this. So I always had to figure out where am I going and what does that audience want? How do they speak? How do they think?
Yeah.
So for me, it became a really quick path to more or less read almost any person. You always have some kind of, you know, CIA trained, whatever. But for the most part, people are pretty transparent. And they leave clues as to who they are and where they're going and what's important to them. Yeah. So I kind of learned, I created a methodology, you know, to kind of pull the elements of that story out and make sense of it and help the person see it on a map and help them to understand their life mission and their values, the outcomes that they should be seeking in life and role. Meaning in life, not at work, what role should they be playing for other people? And then looking at their negative scripts, you know, that little bird that's always tweeting, oh, you're not good enough, you haven't gone to the right school or you have no experience. And then the reason why I do all this, why I love to write and to coach, what I call founding stories, which is really what formative experiences have you had? You know, some people have health issues as kids. Some people have they grow up in poverty or they're immigrants or, I don't know, they're children of divorce. You know, there's no shortage of these stories that people just kind of stuff in the closet. They want to look like everyone else and sound like everyone else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, Joe Schmo at Bank X.
Yeah.
No, you're not.
Yeah.
The best part about what, you know, what you bring is in that closet. It's the stuff that you don't like telling people because it's not acceptable.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's where this kind of idea that, okay, let me help people do that, but let me do that not just by helping people leave great companies, by going into those companies and coaching them before they leave. And also, you know what? Okay, if I want to have lasting change, I have to run HR. And HR is something that scarred me in many different places because it was done so poorly.
Yeah.
Ironically, not in a very human way, which is terrible.
Yeah.
Well, you have to make the trains run on time. There's legal and compliance. You have to get out of the box. You have to coach people. You have to set up systems to help people thrive and really understand where they're going for their career path. How are they doing performance wise? You know, ask people's opinions. Hey, what do you think about what color should we change the paint on the walls to?
Yeah.
Simple things that most people are like, what? Yeah, what? Well, why would I ask them? So that's how I got into HR, essentially by seeing the human angle, what makes people tick, how to make them do their best work when they're in the company before they leave.
Right.
And then, you know, so the coaching is still at the heart of that consulting, but, you know, you have to set up systems, you have to train people, you have to kind of help to underwrite the growth and scaling beyond that.
Yeah, so yeah. And Yuri, would a typical engagement be an organization seeking your services to help broadly assess its workforce and make sure that they stay around and those sort of things? Or is it one-on-one coaching with senior execs, or is it a bit of both?
It's definitely both. The big picture is that I get engaged as a consultant to come in partly to do HR. It's never just HR, right? HR can't exist in a vacuum because it also needs a budget. It also needs oversight and connection with operations and strategy, among other things.
Right? Yep.
Not to mention finance.
Yes.
So for me, HR is the last of six stops on a very long and winding train ride.
Yep.
In that train ride, I mean, I've been very fortunate to touch quite extensively on finance, on operations, on strategy, and business development and marketing, all these things. I've had to do them for myself and helping others build their businesses. So by definition, a lot of what I do is you know, it's almost quaint that it's called HR consulting because it's a lot of things that are not called HR at all.
Mm.
And I come in as a classical management consultant and strategy consultant, but also I go down into the weeds. I'm not just, you know, blowing hot air and showing decks to people because that's not enough.
Yeah.
I go in and I put the pipes together, so I make sure the systems talk to each other. I train people to use those systems. Then I help people to see why is it that using these systems or, you know, kind of using that training is going to help them grow in their career. That's when things really stick.
Yeah.
Right? Because as we know, digital transformations, 80% of them fail for that specific reason, because they're not done in a human way.
Yeah.
Use this, use that, you know, five systems, 10 systems. What does this do for me? Why do I need to do this?
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's fascinating. And that must be, you must get a lot of sort of personal satisfaction and feeling of achievement when you see, you know, individuals, you know, really come out of their shell and thrive, but also organisations. I gather that's probably the most rewarding part of what you do.
Exactly, right. Yeah. You have to, when you see change in a person, suddenly they feel almost alive, right? Before they were walking zombies. What am I doing here? You know, now they understand why they're here, what they're doing, how to do it better, how to grow. A lot of my work is really learning and development. You call it coaching, you call it, you know, this or that, but that's what I love doing.
Yep.
Maybe because I'm the child of two academics, you know, I love teaching. It just fixes it, you know.
Yeah. And in teaching, I gather, and my brother's a principal of a school and he sometimes relates the challenges of teaching. What would you find the biggest challenges are? Do you find there's people that don't want to learn? Do you find, you know, what's the frustration in what you do and how do you get over that?
Of course, there's no lack of, nor shortage of resistance to be found, right?
Yeah.
People generally, a lot of them hide from me, right? They, you know, they see, oh, he looks like a benevolent guy. Oh, he's a nice to have. He's an HR consultant. So a lot of them, they kind of think, oh, well, yeah, that's great. I don't really need that. I'll just hide because I've been hiding, you know, in plain sight this whole time.
Yeah.
So I have to do things in this kind of push and pull manner. I'm not going to be a bad cop, but I have to be more firm through leadership.
Yeah.
So I make leadership understand, hey, listen, your people are more or less hiding. You think they're doing nothing. That's one of the biggest kind of misperceptions these days. I'm constantly, you know, doing all these HR executive groups and keynotes. Leadership is thinking that most workers don't do anything. What the hell do they do all day?
Yeah.
Like, they're actually working harder than they ever have. It's just they're not working smartly.
Yeah.
You're not helping them to see the bigger picture. You're just more or less yelling at them. It's all command and control.
Yeah.
You have to turn people. It's rusty gears, and you have to grind them and kind of knock heads together sometimes. But yeah, eventually, you know, people see the light, see where they're going, how to do things better.
Yeah.
And somewhere in there, I strongly believe every single person wants to progress. You know, they may not like to call it learning or development or coaching, but there is something screaming inside every person. Hey, I want to learn, even if it may look up.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny, Yuri, and I don't know whether it's a similar situation in the US, but, you know, organizations over here will frequently hear phrases like, you know, we can't attract the right people, or, you know, we can't retain the right people, or, you know, we want to make sure we've got the right talent to achieve the objectives of the organisation. And it's ironic that, you know, 100 people will be shown the door or whatever, and you know, you can't say 100 people are the problem, right? There's got to be something in the way the organisation grows and grooms and learns and develops their people that's missing in that, surely. I mean, do you have that? Is that a similar sort of scenario? Are you having organisations that say we're struggling to get the people we need to execute?
See, the trouble with HR is that it's a four-letter word. That's how it's perceived.
Yeah,
it's perceived that, well, it's a drain on my resources. What is their ROI? What the hell are they actually doing there? They must be paper pushers.
Yeah,
right? Because you have this image of Toby from The Office or that type of person, right? That basically, what are they doing here?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing is education. Again, only a relatively small part of what I do is making the trains run on time, the legal, compliance, benefits, payroll. They're very important. And when you go to founders and entrepreneurs, the first thing that they react to is not, oh, yeah, people development.
Yeah.
More, right?
Like, yeah.
You're losing money, idiot. A lot of it.
Yeah.
Okay? If you have nobody to do work, you're going to go out of business.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, really? Oh, yes. So the irony of what I have to do when I go into an organization is, unless there's that awareness from people that already want to grow on their own, meaning the leadership, unless they have that desire to grow and learn and develop, become better leaders and managers, I have to go through, it's almost like a Trojan horse. I hate to say it, but that's kind of true. Yep. To say, hey, you know, I'm going to save you $100,000 on your benefits and payroll like that.
Yeah.
Connect the pipes differently. Ah, yeah, okay. Okay, well, now that, you know, we have the conversation, let's talk about actually developing your people and thinking about what systems do we need in place to actually underwrite your growth.
Yeah.
Oh, you're right, right. I have to show founders and C-suites the financial impact.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, most of them don't really, they don't grasp the importance for the ROI of developing their people.
Yeah.
It's pulling teeth till I'm in there, then they see the effect of one-on-one coaching for themselves and their employees. Suddenly, wow, you're right. Okay, yeah, let's do it. Let's do your training, Yuri.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it sounds like you're very much, whether consciously or subconsciously, but you're utilizing risk management, and particularly, as we say, the upside. So people forget, they hear this word risk and they get all negative and, you know, it's going to be a threat or it's a problem. But risk is also opportunity. So you're using the opportunity side of things to get the conversation going. Hey, I can help save you money if we start to think about things a little differently. So that's great. I mean, where else have you come across sort of risk management in and used it in your activities and your engagements and talking to organizations?
Well, I would put it like this. The simplest and most straightforward risk is legal risk.
Yeah.
Right. Maybe it's the legal background, but I've seen as head of HR, but also as an employee, I've seen so many instances of where organizations just blatantly refuse to acknowledge the risk of lawsuit because of sexual harassment,
yep.
Because of discrimination,
yep.
Because they are unfair in their treatment of certain workers.
Yep.
It's just glaring. And you know, at a certain point, maybe I wasn't aware of what to call that. I mean, I was, you know, I had to get out of a couple non-compete clauses, right,
yeah.
With different startups. So for me, that was very illuminating because I hired a lawyer in one case and I did most of the work myself because I have the legal training. And I just saw that, you know, how easily things can flip on their head if the lawyer is not good enough or if their practices are discriminatory or what have you. It's a disaster. I mean, it's a massive risk.
Yep.
Just sitting there in plain sight, even with the lawyer, even all that, because their HR is not thoughtful. They're not strategic, and they're just kind of walking zombies.
Yeah.
So that's one other really big piece that I found is really critical to bring to the table. You have to understand the law. You have to understand how to implement it and how to anticipate certain kinds of risk, whether that's contract risk, vendor risk, you know, the risk of hiring certain kinds of people. You have to think these things through. And if nothing else, if you're doing it almost retroactively, you're starting to think about some kind of business continuity. What happens if this person leaves? Or what happens if, I don't know, our business is cut by half, right? You have to think about risk all the time.
Yeah.
But founders, you know, rah, 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 yeah, we're doing well, we're growing. Like, well, okay, but what is your financial model look like?
Yeah.
Risk is everywhere. It's hiding in plain sight.
Yeah.
I kind of have learned because, again, I come from all of that upheaval and all of that being unprepared for risk.
Yeah.
I had to learn really the hard way, but as we say, by knocking my head on all the walls to look for the soft spot.
Yeah.
I've got a lot of welts. that's what really helps you to understand how to identify risk and then how to manage it.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Yuri, I can't wait to ask you this question based on your background and all of the things that you've done and the experiences that you had. But all organizations at the moment across the globe are going through massive change. Now, a lot of it brought on by COVID itself or brought on by the ramifications and the after effects. So what tips would you give organizations to manage this change? I mean, it's almost once in a generation type change that we're going through. What sort of things would you be advising leaders to be thinking about when managing change in their business?
It's a big question. The funny thing is I'm actually giving a keynote exactly on this subject on Wednesday.
Ah, there you go.
To marketing execs in Europe. So I'll try to be mercifully brief. I'll say, look, this situation,
yeah,
is a great opportunity. Again, not looking at it just as a risk thing.
Mm.
You have, you know, all kinds of lawsuits, at least in the U.S. You have people starting to mix in some kind of COVID-19 violations along with their, you know, I don't know, sexual harassment suits or discrimination suits. So you're starting to see a lot of this litigation with COVID-19 attached.
Right.
Okay? That's the risk side. If you look at the opportunity side, again, before a person is frankly so pissed off and annoyed at being in a bad company with bad practices, make them feel like they're valued. I mean, it's kumbaya, right? But what does it mean to make someone feel valued? Well, give them feedback. How are they actually doing? And give that feedback not once a year or once every 6 months or even 3 months. Give them feedback regularly. Record that feedback in some kind of performance management system. Okay, that's number one. Number two, give them training, give them coaching. You know, that's a more evolved version of feedback. It's not just saying, hey, you presented well, try again, you know, with better pictures next time. It's saying, okay, you know, you've got great potential here. I know that you want to grow in this way to the next level of your career, to be a manager and so on. I understand, yes, I was in that position where nobody taught me to be a manager, so I'm going to put you in new manager training.
Right.
I'm going to get you a coach. And you know what? I'm going to help you. I want to make sure that as you're learning, as you're developing, step into that role in an informed way. You know what you're doing. You know where you're going. You have the right tools and strategies. You can communicate.
Yeah.
That's a totally different animal when somebody takes the time to say, I get it. I was there. It was painful. Let's do this better.
Yeah.
And the way we're going to do this better is here. You know, here's this progression, step A to Z. They're going to diagram your progress, and your progress is going to help you get promoted and paid more. Wow. Right. I spent all of what, you know, half an hour here or there to talk to that person just to give them the, you know, perception that, hey, I care.
Yeah.
And put in the systems and the coaching, and HR has awareness also, right, to help that person really grow.
Yeah.
It's not rocket science.
Yeah.
You don't throw someone to the wolves and say, hey, manage, you know?
Yeah.
No, nobody knows how to manage without any experience. It's just crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you have to show people that you care. You have to help them see the progression.
Yeah.
You have to underwrite that progression by not throwing money at some kind of random perks or benefits, but really ask the person, what do you want to do? Where do you want to grow?
Yeah.
And then how can I help you in that journey?
Yeah.
It's not complicated. It doesn't have to cost a lot of money or time.
Yeah. Yeah.
That breeds loyalty. That breeds, you know, innovation. That breeds a lot of great things in a virtuous cycle.
Yeah.
Rather than, hey, you know, figure it out yourself, you know, you're just another cog in the wheel, and that's a vicious cycle.
Yeah, yeah.
The person has half a brain, they see the writing on the wall, and they leave because they can get a job somewhere else because they're actually
Yeah, that's right. Change is always difficult, and if you're not going to get people on board and they're not committed, well, then you're not going to get anywhere, are you? No, that's fantastic. Thank you. I guess one last question. You're talking to some young people about to start out their career journey. What are the three top tips for success you would give them, regardless of the field? What advice, having, you know, lived life that you have so far and experienced all the things that you have, what are the three tips for success?
Universal basic income. I'm kidding. Sorry, that joke. I would say, you know, first is, very simple. Take charge of your own personal and professional development.
Yeah.
You cannot wait for other people to want to mentor you, to coach you, to promote you. You have to be your own biggest champion. And if you're not, you're missing out on lots of income and lots of growth. You'll only find frustration.
Yeah.
No. Number two is a very simple maxim, which I learned late in the game, but thankfully not too late. If you don't ask, the answer is always no.
Mm.
So you have to bloody well ask.
Yep.
Always. Every chance to get, ask. If you need help, ask for help. If you want growth, ask for growth. If you want a coach, ask for a coach. If you don't, nobody will step up, most likely, unless you're very lucky with a boss, with a company. And the third is not to sound silly, but yeah, you have to find a way to be your own commander in chief, right? There's a reason why I wrote the book with that title. What do I mean by that? That can be a thousand different things. It's not be your own president. Certainly, don't be your own god.
Yep.
Right. What is a commander in chief? It's someone that commands a structure, right? That has people that answer to him or her. And yet it's someone who's eminently vulnerable and aware of his or her own kind of, you know, finitude.
Yeah.
and that really that person doesn't control that much. Whatever they do control, seemingly it's a lot, but it's actually not that much.
Right.
Really better do a great job. You have to have a great, you know, way to understand how your body works, right? And have that kind of conversation. Understand your mental models and life skills and sort of, you know, teach yourself adulting. And
yes.
There's a way to do that intelligently rather than by the way I did, which is hitting my head on the wall looking for the soft spot.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to learn how to deal with other people. First of all, to get the wrong people out of your orbit, and then with the right people to be 300% yourself, number one. Number two, to bring value to people and to help them in any way you can. Every person has a certain capability, a set of, you know, traits, experiences, etc., that they can use to help other people. So you have to figure out, what does that look like? Who's my ideal client that I can help? That can be a business, that can be a job, that can be a charity you give, no problem. And then the last question, the last of four when you're climbing up a mountain is, what is my conversation with God or the universe?
Mm.
Because you have to contextualize yourself. What is all this for? Why is there suffering? Why did I have to go through all that? What is it for?
Yeah.
You know, you also need to feel like you're a total nothing sometimes in the grand scheme of the universe. And other times that, you know, the world cannot function without me. And that's why God brought me here at a certain time, with certain people in a certain context.
Yeah.
And that's how you start kind of contextualizing a way to grow, but also to check in with yourself every day, month, year, and with time.
Yeah. Fantastic. Excellent. Well, they're great tips, Yuri. Thank you very much. And there's plenty of young listeners to the podcast. I get lots of feedback from those, so that they'll hopefully take some of those wise words and put them into action. Now, how do people get in touch with you or get your books or those sort of things? You have a website or something that they can touch base with you?
Sure. The simplest way is just go to my website, yurikruman.com, yurikruman.com. That has a link for my book. You can also look for it on Amazon. It's already up for pre-order. Be your own commander in chief. Please be in touch. Like I said, I love to teach and talk to new people. So it's always a pleasure when somebody gets in touch.
Excellent. No, that's fantastic. Thanks, Yuri. I'll put the website address in the show notes as well. And we do have quite a large North American audience as well. So some of the lucky listeners possibly will get the chance to see you give a keynote speech or do a book launch or those sort of things as well. So congratulations again on the book and good luck with that as well. Thank you for taking the time. It's been a great pleasure to speak to you. And I'm sure the listeners have got some great information out of it as well.
Thank you so much, Anthony. Really appreciate it.
No problems. Well, listeners, thank you very much for tuning in again. This has been Mastering Risk Management Podcast. I'm Anthony Wilson. If you wish to talk to me about anything risk, make suggestions about potential guests for the program or questions you'd like me to ask guests, please get in touch. You can contact me at anthony.wilson@abmrisk.com.au or my mobile is 0404 829 040. So thank you once again, and we will talk again soon. Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you.